This podcast is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network, and it's also proud to be from Texas. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
The voice that you're listening to is that of someone who should already have been dead a long, long time ago. So, if that doesn't sound ominous enough, let me begin. Welcome to another bonus episode of 2BT. This is Sparky's Reading Room, and I'm Michael here, and let's get into it. This episode's kind of going to be about a little bit more of a background about why reading means so much to me, why books have so much power for me, and kind of a look back at that and some of the early books I would look at when I was a younger kid that really kind of started this lifelong journey into learning and enjoying the written word. And so let's get going. Part of the reason why books mean so much to me has to do with my background. I grew up a second child of a farmer. My grandparents were farmers. My parents were farmers. My uncle was a farmer. I grew up in a rural community in North Texas, and that was the entire world. My entire world was my little trailer that I grew up in, and my sister and my mother and my father and my grandparents and my cousins and my aunts and uncles, and that was the world. Early on, when I was about 3.5-4 years old, I survived an extremely violent, let's just say, wrestling match with a piece of equipment that left me severely injured, and it should have killed me. Looking back, I was awake during it, most of it. I'm sure I fell into shock at some point. After I was extricated from the piece of machinery and carried to this guy's, they broke into a guy's house to put me on a bed and wrap me with towels to slow the bleeding. But you know, looking back at it, knowing how small I was, knowing how devastating the effect of the machinery on me when I got hung up in it, I should have died. I don't see how I couldn't have bled out, but you know, medical personnel saved my life. My parents saved my life. My aunt and uncle saved my life. They were there through no fault of their own. This happened to me. It's just one of those things. You never know what's going to happen. So here I was, little boy, seriously injured. I never liked the term handicap. I had some disabilities, I guess you'd say. But living in a little isolated rural area, spending a lot of time alone, I would go out and help my dad. He'd take me to work. I'd go to school during the school year. But a lot of time you spend is spending alone. And you can watch TV. Or you can also, you know, I discovered books. And in books, I discovered that there was a world bigger than the one that I had lived, experienced up until that time. Reading opened up so much for me. And in fact, reading showed me that there's a world bigger than the actual world that we even have, that we live in. Because when you start getting into the explorations of the imagination, can go so much farther than what the limitations of our actual world are. Even as vast as it is, and as many stories are there that are there to be told, the writer can provide you with an infinite amount of places to explore, ideas to explore, people to get to know, and it's all just because this ability to open up a book or hit play on an audio book and listen to the magic happen, all this adventure. All this and terror and joy and wonderfulness and ugliness and beauty that is the world can be summed up into just these pages. And the true masters are the ones that can, through their art, touch you in a sublime way, in an ineffable way that makes the written word part of you. And you carry it with you, even if you can't remember the exact quotation, it will become a part of you and enrich your life. I didn't grow up in a family of readers. I grew up in a very religious family. So by the age of 12, I'd read the Bible. 12, 13, I probably had read the Bible twice through. So I knew that really well. And one thing that occurs to me about growing up in a fundamentalist evangelical church is one of the things that they ingrain in you is how powerful the word is, the word being the Bible. And something that kind of hit me, though, is if this much power is contained in the pages of this one book, and there are so many other books, what other mysteries and magic and lessons and adventure and what other wonderful things can be found from reading. And I was fortunate that reading was something that I was good at. I excelled at it at an early age. So in school, I would get to go into advanced reading groups and get to read books that are a little ahead of my age. And to me, it made my life more fulfilled in that I had this outlet considering the things that I was dealing with. And I loved it. Loved it early on, and I never stopped, and I haven't stopped. And so that just occurred to me that's part of that is that it was kind of my parents' fault for making me go to church that I became such a big reader, because I did see the power in the written word. But earlier on, and my parents, you know, they weren't big readers, except for what they read for going to church and Sunday school and materials like that in the newspaper. But at the same time, they never really kept us from reading. My sister's a reader, I'm a reader, and books were available to us. My mom would take us to the library, and school we would have to read, of course, and it was wonderful. I also grew up in a culture where people that read a lot were looked on suspiciously. People that had an education were looked at, something's not quite right about them, not to be trusted. They think they know things that they don't, when I know things that just because I know them. That kind of attitude. And it still exists. And it's a bias against education, about being informed and trying to learn and opening your minds to other things than just your own experience and your own opinions, which is one of the values of reading. So one of the best things my parents ever did for us was they got us a set of world book encyclopedias with the two giant dictionaries and the several volumes. I remember when the box finally showed up, and I don't know if I was even in school, but I could read just enough. I think I could make out my name and things like that. And the one thing I was really excited about is when they unboxed all the books, and I wanted to look my name up in the dictionary, and I did. And I don't know if I read it or if my mom read it to me. I would look at it, and it scared the hell out of me, because it said the Michael is the archangel in the Bible that will defeat the dragon and blah, 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 blah. And I was like, wait, that's not me, but that's my name. Because I didn't know anybody else named Michael. So I thought that is about me. And that, I mean, granted, I was a little and stupid, and I knew it wasn't me. But at the same time, I was like, had this fear, like, I don't want to fight a dragon. I don't want to be that guy that fights the dragon. And despite that, despite the fact that I was scared that I was going to be this guy that had to go face off in this big dragon fight, later, you know, as I started reading, I was attracted to books that led me to fighting dragons. I was attracted to books that had adventure and exploration. Early books were Call of the Wild, White Fang by Jack London, Treasure Island by Stevenson, on and on. And I'm going to kind of mention those later in another episode, a lot more of the books that I read earlier on. And that's why right now I'm reading with Dave and Steve Iron Gold, the fourth book in the Red Rising Saga by Pierce Brown, and I'm still attracted to stories of adventure. And those stories led me on to other stories that more were kind of adventures of just real life. And to comic books, or I should say back to comic books. I haven't even touched on the reading of comics when I was a kid. They were there. One more thing that I wanted to bring up before I moved on and drew this to a close was the fact that my parents got these World Book Encyclopedias for us was a big deal for my sister and I, especially for me, because we didn't have a lot of money. And I'm pretty sure I have a memory of it actually being a door-to-door salesperson coming up and selling them on that. And for them to do this and to get these books was really an investment in me and my sister. They saw it as something that we could get value out of and could help us with our future in education. And that being said, I was talking with Dave about this the other day, and he's like, yeah, I remember you were always reading the encyclopedia. And I was like, yeah, I kind of did. I would, when I, you know, I don't believe in getting bored. So if I didn't have anything else to do, or something I was interested in or thinking about, that's what the wonder of these books. And for people that have never encountered an encyclopedia, considering the internet now is right there with everything, supposedly in Wikipedia, everything's just right there for you. I mean, when you wanted to learn something, you actually had to put a little work in it. Go to the library and dig things up and look in journals and magazines and newspapers and encyclopedias and other reference books. But now with the internet, I kind of fear for some kids in the future that they're losing out on an important developmental skill and actually part of the process of actually doing research and trying to teach yourself something through work and figuring out the puzzle of where do I get this information, when a lot of it's just handed to you and taken at face value as this is legitimate. And I've seen that on some of my daughter's schoolwork when she's done things and she just sources the internet, not really having the foundation to judge whether this website she's getting the information from is a legitimate one or not. And I've seen her quote some stuff that ended up being just made up stuff, like for a history class. But that's beside the point. Yeah, I would sit and I would read the encyclopedia. I was interested in the Civil War. I'd go read that, and there were linking articles to different people and battles. And, you know, I'm from Texas, so I would read about the history of Texas, and that would lead me to different individual biographical information about different people. And, yeah, I was that weird kid that would read the encyclopedia. I'm not going to say I read it from A to Z, page to page, but I did cover quite a bit of that thing, and I think it did help me when I was in school. So yeah, I was no Encyclopedia Brown, which was another series of books I loved when I was a kid, but I was working on it. And, you know, it just meant a lot to me because I learned a lot from these books, and I really appreciate the fact that my parents, even though they didn't read much themselves or have an interest in that kind of thing, that they actually did make this investment in me and my sister. So thanks to them. So this has kind of been a long-winded second introduction to the importance of reading and why I love it so much and how important it is to me. And I'm looking forward to actually just tackling one book at a time and kind of going over why this particular book meant a lot to me. Hope I've not been too boring. Of course, it doesn't really matter if you don't like listening to me ramble on like I am. All you gotta do is turn it off and don't download it again. But I do appreciate you giving me a chance. After the outro, to try to maybe even more succinctly explain this obsession that I've always had with stories and adventures and books and the like, I've added a part of a short story or a story I've been working on that kind of, there's no secret that there's a little bit of me in the boy that's in the story. It's not based on any reality, of course, but I hope you enjoy it. And if you know, you've got any feedback, let me know. So there we go. This is second episode of The Reading Room. And when I get a chance, I'll actually tackle an actual book. And I look forward to talking with Dave and Steve about Iron Gold, which I got to tell you is freaking amazing. And I really am inspired and impressed by this guy's writing, and I look forward to years to come with what he has to say in his books. So thanks a lot. Reach out to us with any comments or ideas at 2BT Show. That is the number 2, capital B, capital T, small SHOW at Twitter, at 2BT Show at Twitter, on Twitter. So, adios.
Lord, I'm walking down the line, walking down the line. I'm walking down the line, fiddly fine. Tell you about my troubled mind.
That wasn't terrible.
That was pathetic. Ooh.
Nerdy Legion.
NerdyLegion.com.
I first learned about Con Metawar when I was a young boy, and it didn't take long for a passing interest to grow into a life-changing obsession. That this preoccupation developed at the same age during which my parents uprooted our family from suburban life and moved us out to the country is not a coincidence. I might have eventually come across the name of this particular legendary figure, but it's very unlikely that my relationship would have evolved beyond a passing familiarity with an entertaining story. Had I not stumbled upon Con Metawar in the way that I did, this mania would not have stabbed its claws so deep into me. I definitely would have never have met the real Con Metawar. Sounds crazy, I know. and that is why I'm writing this down. We moved into an old but surprisingly large two-story house that an old man had called home for decades. I remember my dad saying that he had been an eccentric old coot. Mom said that it was a fixer-upper of a house. No one knew what had happened to the old man. He just disappeared. Whatever authorities are called in to do such things mounted an investigation, and over time it became apparent that he was gone for good, vanished with no traceable family or relations of any sort to bestow the property to. This mystery man led a very isolated and almost unrecorded life. That's where my family enters the scene. See, I was a perfectly happy 12-year-old kid. I liked where we lived. School was easy, very easy. But I managed to avoid being picked on somehow. In retrospect, I guess it was my superpower, the ability to go unnoticed, much like the old mystery man. I had a couple of acquaintances that served as the friends that my parents desperately wanted me to find. Most importantly, we lived only a couple of blocks from a fantastic library. Provided that I spend some time outside at the park next to the library, my parents allowed me to visit it as often as I wanted to, which was all the time. So everything was pretty okay. It was a very satisfactory and safe place to grow up. Then my parents somehow developed a mood that called for a drastic life change. It all happened so fast. My grandfather called my dad one night and told him that there was this amazing opportunity to buy some property at a discount price. The country placed the property up for auction to recoup uncollected taxes. Dad placed a bid. The bid won. We moved. I never even got to see the place, and my parents had barely looked at it themselves, except for some pictures my grandfather had sent. I wasn't sad to leave my school. I wasn't sad to leave my friends. I wasn't sad to leave my neighborhood or park. I was devastated to lose my library, though. My parents promised me that everything would be okay. There was a tiny library nearby in a nearby small town, nearly meaning 10 miles. They explained that the property had been bought, contents and all, which meant that the buyer would have to dispose of a bunch of unwanted items, so we'd be staying pretty busy. Then Dad said the old man had apparently been a bit bookish himself, and that I could go through some of the ones he had left behind before he got rid of them. That served as some solace, but it did not prepare me for what was to come. It came as quite a surprise when, upon entering a door up some stairs that I assumed led to an attic, we discovered the crazy old mystery man's library, with surprisingly high walls lined with shelves that held books on practically every subject or interest one might have. The room covered an area that nearly equaled that of the entire house. Stepping into that room was one of the most profound experiences of my life. I'm not ashamed to admit that I even cried a little bit, but they were tears of joy. Yeah, I was a weird kid. If you haven't caught on by now, I might as well just say it. Books were kind of a big deal for me. Books had always been more than just ink or paper bound with a cover. Books were magical objects capable of bringing about joy and sadness, inflicting fear and pain, filling my mind with knowledge and understanding, thrilling me with mystery, introducing me to new people, and transporting me to distant lands throughout the epochs of time. So it should come as no surprise when I say that upon opening that attic door, I saw more than a dusty room filled with a dead man's literary obsession and a lot of work to remove them. I saw a glimpse of what I believed heaven must be like. Mom and Dad saw a lot of work. Removing the contents of the room would add hours and hours to their already sizable workload. Being a thoughtful and caring son, I offered a solution. "I want it," I said. "Please. Let me use it for a bedroom. Leave everything. It's perfect. Love it. I love it. Please, please, please." They weren't immediately sold with my begging, but they didn't immediately dismiss it at the same time as the rantings of a lunatic child. Dad did say, however, "The boy's crazy." And Mom replied, "I've never heard of anything like it. But I guess there'd be no harm in it." "I'm not so sure," said Dad, "unless you consider never seeing him again no harm. We're going to have to think on it." They discussed the pros and cons like rational adults and then delivered their verdict. They sat me down for a talk. My parents knew I was a strange kid, and they didn't normally try to make me normal like some parents will do, but this was a special case. I wanted something big, and they wanted some things in return. There would be rules. I would have to spend time out of the room. I could not while away all of my days cooped up in the library room. I had chores. I would not let my obsessiveness interfere with my actual schoolwork. I had to remember that there was a world outside of my head and outside of the house, and I had to go get to know it too. They actually wrote them down and made me sign it. I'm not kidding. I had to sign my name to a contract saying I would not stay in the library. I agreed with everything they said, of course. I could live with these rules as long as I had the room, and the exploration I pursued within it would aid me in my exploration without. I became the boy who lived in a library. It didn't take me long to discover the old man had not been much of a discriminator when it came to subject matter. The library housed just about every kind of book one would need for a first-rate education. The sciences, arts, mathematics, natural history, religion, philosophy, history, geography, everything was covered, and he had gathered a wonderful assortment of literature. Faulkner, Hemingway, Twain, Stevenson, Dostoevsky, Tolstoy, Doyle, Gogol, Chekhov, shared shelf space with Louis L'Amour, Zane Grey, Lovecraft, Robert E. Howard, J.R.R. Tolkien, E.R. Edison, Jack London, Joseph Conrad, Emile Zola, Virginia Woolf, Lloyd Alexander, Agatha Christie, and the list goes on and on and on. These authors were just the tip of the iceberg, so to speak. The old man had a especially facile talent, I later discovered, in searching out amazing works by more obscure authors. I familiarized myself with all of the library, but the tales of adventure became my great love. I could get lost for hours in a well-crafted adventure story. I became the child that stayed out in the rain in a darkened forest, or on the run from a band of angry, bloodthirsty orcs. I imagined my pet dog to be a loyal wolf I had raised from a pup, and the corner of the attic where I slept alternated between being a cell in a dungeon or a grand suite in a fortress. I hid in the Trojan horse with Odysseus and faced the Cyclops beside him as he made his way home. I traveled east with Bilbo and back again with Frodo adventuring in Middle-earth. I became an assistant pig keeper alongside Taryn in the land of Prydane. I sailed in search of treasure with Jim Hawkins and fought the pirates led by my trickster friend Long John Silver. I drank and feasted alongside my king Beowulf. I ventured into dark caves with Tom and Sawyer and Becky Thatcher and floated down the mighty Mississippi with Huck and Jim. I grew up with Tarzan in the jungle and assisted Holmes and Watson solving mysteries in London. I narrowly survived the fate of Captain Ahab and his crew by clinging to Ishmael. I trailed behind Sancho as he journeyed with his noble knight, Don Quixote. I slew sorcerers with Conan and went mad exploring the horrors of Cthulhu and the Old Ones. I rode beneath the waves on Captain Nemo's Nautilus and journeyed to the center of the earth with Professor Lindenbrock and his nephew, Axel. My father often caught me, lost in thought, and as I ventured forth on a grand quest to distant lands. He would remind me, dreams are good, son, but real life is an adventure, too. How will you deal with a real-life quest if you don't go about the business of living? I would nod and agree with him and then return to Adventureland. Then one day, while reading through Sibelius's The Cherubic Wanderer, I came across the line, "Friend, you have read enough. If you desire still more, then be the poem yourself and all that it stands for." So I decided to work harder at finding a balance. It was in the tomes of fiction that I first discovered Con Metawar. Through more digging, I came to realize that my mysterious and sadly disappeared benefactor had likewise shared an obsession with Metawar, and it bridged the gap between fiction and reality when I dug deeper into the stack of books. It was the name on the shelf of books repeated over and over that first caught my eye, Con Metawar in the Valley of Death, Con Metawar in the Witch's Cauldron, Con Metawar in the Spear of Destiny, Con Metawar in the Cannibals of Koth. The list of books in the series goes on, and these are the books that first fixed my imagination and carried me to a land of magic, where I traveled along with my new friend and hero, Con Metawar. It didn't take me long to realize that there were more books that touched on Metawar, and a handful of others that were completely devoted to him. The Search for the Picatrix, The King Who Walked Away, The King Without a Crown, The Adventures of Con Metawar, The Ectri, being The Adventures of Con Metawar, Anton Pessoa, and Crow Brother, The People of the Crow, The Blood Cults of the Plains, The Valley of Death, The Hidden Valley, and The Silver Chair, The Beginnings of Sorrow, The Desolate Abomination, Sea and Sky, Snow and Rain, Wind and Flame, Hidden in Darkness, A Sound from Heaven, The Invention of the Heart. All these books dealt either in passing or in great depth with Con Metawar, Atticus Freeling's A History of Darkness had three chapters on them. Richard Cotter's Vagabonds and Rogues of the Great Expanse had two. Abigail Ricarda's Metawar, Messiah and Destroyer of the Plains and Mountains thrilled me. Almost every book referenced another, The Lives and Deaths of Con Metawar by Richard Bresson. Sadly, no matter how diligently I searched the shelves, I could not find this book.